You got personally owned by the president.
I did.
Oh, one more. Oh, right. Wow. I forgot about that.
When his power really started getting questioned is when he called on people to be fired and they weren't fired. That's like literally the first time he'd done that, I think. But
to have the your name in the president's mouth?
Yeah, what was it like to lie about the crowd size at one of the fine president's rallies?
What was it like to do the deep state's bidding?
That was like a weird night because I found so the president attacked me for tweeting something snarky. And actually, it was great because I've learned to really hate reply guy culture. Where the president says something and you do a "you sir," yeah. Right? I don't care anymore. I mean, it's a statement. He makes it. I just had seen a photo of this rally that wasn't filled in yet, but you could see Trump like scouting in the background. I thought it was him walking in to something that wasn't full. And he does like say like, "It's a great crowd and there's 20,000 people outside," and there aren't. There aren't like no people outside. So I just snarked once and didn't really think about it. And then I actually deleted it. And hours later, 6 hours, 7 hours later, I was at like a friend's Christmas party. And people just started texting me, but just like, you know, how Twitter's insufferable in a football game because everyone just says like, damn, yeah. Shit, whoa. And like, they can't explain what they're talking about. It was like that. Just text like, oh shit, Dave. And I what was this? And it was weird because I checked. I was like, hey, I'd already deleted this tweet. Did I do anything wrong? And they said, well, you know, don't tweet things that are wrong. But this doesn't seem like the worst thing in the world.
But the key thing is here, you were wrong. I lied about the rally side.
I was trying
full
to bring down the president. Yeah, that's true.
It was a classic Trump moving the goalpost, though, because first he said, I can't believe this. They haven't even retracted this. And then he said, yeah, I'm sorry about that. He's like, and he hasn't been fired. Just like any bid will be met by another demand, which is why you can't give him anything.
Why can't you give him as the Speaker of the House realized earlier. Really.
But yeah, that was the first time he said somebody should get fired, and they didn't fire the person.
Well,
and that is the beginning of the end of his power.
I guess the lesson here is, you know, never snark without thinking. Or if you snark, you better not miss.
I think it's just never tweet. I don't know when I've benefited from tweeting this much. I'm here now. I guess that helped.
Yeah. Imagine benefiting materially from tweeting.
From tweeting? Absurd. Absurd.
Will is petting his ascot right now.
And the Lynx cat that I've just bought from... without further ado, I should formally introduce our guest for this week. It's political reporter for the Washington Post, Dave Weigel.
Yes, good to be here.
Dave,
thank you very much.
Scoops Weigel.
Yeah.
He's got a hat with a press card in the brim.
I feel bad because there's this reporter, Jimmy Vielkin, at the Daily News who actually does that. And I pointed at a photo, and like, no insult. It was like a photo of the Gillibrand announcement. Everyone looks like crap, is wearing like a shell suit and a t-shirt. And there's one guy who's like, I hear there's news on the scene. And it's Jimmy, and he's a good reporter. And I think he took it personally. I didn't mean that.
Everyone should do that. Yeah. I would never, ever criticize someone for doing the press. Badge thing that rules, and everyone should do it instead of having a fucking
lanyard. Yeah, no, that's what we're so cool. We instead have like a neon lanyard with like a big picture that's like your driver's license with blurrier,
yeah,
and like a chip on it. That's way cooler than a hat.
Yeah, what? Oh, you've got a badge in your rakishly cocked hat. I'd much rather you have a fucking giant necklace that has like a boner medicine on it that you got at a trade show. That's way cooler.
So Dave, you know, political reporter. Let's talk some dang politics.
Yeah.
Like, man, oh man, there's been a lot of politics going on this week.
So many.
There's so many politics, folks.
Check this out. It's only January. Did you know this?
I can't believe it.
I even stopped. I used to be one of those people who do that. I can't believe it's Thursday still on Friday, and it's so exhausting now that I don't even try. It's everyone feels like hell all the time.
Some people who would be feeling a little less like hell, federal workers.
All right.
Yes.
As they begin to see those paychecks begin to trickle in, as we now have a temporary reprieve to the longest government shutdown in history. Trump announcing he would reopen the government for 30 days to give some breathing room, I guess, for the negotiations. But, you know, bottom line, no money for the wall. Pelosi basically just...
She's slayed.
We do not question the character of her.
She's wearing four pairs of sunglasses.
You knew this was swinging when people were sharing of their own volition memes of her just wearing a coat, like when she became a hip figure. But no, this people, too many Republicans went on the record saying that exactly this scenario would be a huge loss for him. So watching them kind of scramble back is difficult. Like Lindsey Graham,
huge loss for Pelosi or the Democrats
for Trump. Like this exact scenario is anything but wall money, because she mocked him pretty incessantly. She's one of those people. It's like, you know, is it Two Towers, the one where the king has been infected by worm tongue and they pull him out and then he de-ages 30 years. That's kind of her when she has power. So she went from somebody who's kind of mumbling, no one showed up to her press conferences, to somebody who really relishes this and has just been making fun of him. Like the one press conference where she just says, somebody asks, like, but how, because reporters, even though I think people think some of the wall demands are stupid, they would say like, but sir, compromise, ma'am, aren't you going to compromise? How much for the wall? And she'd say, a dollar. How much is that? Is a dollar good for you? She just made fun of the demands the whole time. So Republicans were like, if we lose to her, it's humiliation. And they, you know, the wall, I take them at their word.
The wall just got 10 feet shorter.
The thing is, at the outset of this, correct me if I'm wrong, Pelosi offered something on the level of $1.5 to $2 billion, right, just out of general border security. And earlier this week, a lot of the discussion was that the Dems were about to cave and support some kind of moronic high-tech wall compromise that would just mean billions and billions more money, more dollars to militarize the border. Well, and in this deal, in this continuing resolution, they got, what, zero?
They got zero. I mean, let me bring in the politics knowing, I guess, here, because the way that just Congress works, if you're reporting on it, is you can amble around anywhere. The White House is like 13 levels of security to get near to Kellyanne Conway. Congress, you just go up to a congressman and shove your recorder and be like, what do you think of this deal? Yeah. And so it was amazing that very few of them had done it. But like most of the Democrats breaking were like they were caught on the way back from lunch or something. People say, what do you think of the deal? And James Clyburn be like, that sounds fine. But the only thing that mattered was that she wouldn't let them. Like the second anyone was on like TV, like rambling about what would be gettable, she called them back. Like she actually, you know, I don't know how much you want to stand for her, but she is good at that part of the job. Just being like, shut up, get in line. You're never going to be on a committee again if you break on this.
What about, and this was the other story, Republicans in the Senate, and apparently earlier in the day when the deal was announced, a contentious behind closed doors lunch.
Oh yeah, the closed door lunches.
They're doing a closed door luncheon?
Well, I mean, most of the times you go into a room, you do close the door. So I don't know why that part of it is so secretive.
More importantly, what kind of spread are we talking?
They get
sandwiches?
They get this huge catered spread. They get lots of the multiple cookies with like not that many oatmeal raisin. They actually get the chocolate on chocolate kind. You see them roll.
Taxes are paying for this.
You see these people roll in this food for people. It's, you know, seething contempt because they're not actually doing anything in these meetings. But look, like I think the dynamic that Democrats are right about was that Mitch McConnell didn't care about the wall and never has. Mitch McConnell, he likes that Donald Trump has a hand with which he will sign a paper that's like, I appoint these 30 Federalist Society clerks to the district courts. That's all he cares. That's literally, I'm not even being glib anymore. It's all he cares about.
Well, he also cares about going from pieces to weight. on those giant tankers full of cocaine.
All the shipping containers from China.
The cocaine Mitch. The
cocaine speedboat dope.
Yeah.
666.
Well, if that's how McConnell feels, what about the rest of the Senate Republican caucus?
Well, there's like six of them who are kind of worried about getting reelected. Well, there's a few, like Cory Gardner from Colorado.
He's fucking done. What does he even care anymore?
He does feel a little bit like the Dean Heller situation where you have to kind of twist around for 2 years or Heidi Heitkamp. I mean, like we're getting to the point where there's, you know, 23 states that will only elect Democrats and 27 that will only elect Republicans. Yeah. But he didn't want it, and he's really talkative, and reporters like him. But McConnell just didn't care about the wall because he knows it's a scam. He's very good at identifying what, like, the rubes want to hear. And because all he cares about is getting enough judges to, like, strike down campaign finance law, strike down gun law, strike down health care, et cetera, it makes it weird to cover it. People are like, what's going on in the master's mind? It's like, all of his brilliant tactics are like, what if we don't have a vote on this? What if we just sit here for 2 years and don't have a vote on this? On the wall, like, what if we don't do that? What if we just don't do that? Everyone would go away so I can confirm more judges.
I mean, Trump obviously is going to go ahead and he's going to confirm the judges they want. But like, as far as like legislation and like Trump, like the sort of the headline or like the phrase that's being thrown around a lot is that like after the midterms, Trump is pretty much a spent force politically. Mm-hmm. Like obviously a running joke on this show is that like there's nothing Trump could do to like, you know, alienate his base, except for, I would say save for having him perceived to have lost to someone like Nancy Pelosi.
On the question of immigration.
On the question of the wall, especially. And like, because like, this is the lib ownership economy. And you like it only must go, the water must flow downhill, the libs must be owned.
Yeah. Yes.
But if you put that dam in there and wait a second, no money for the wall? It does seem like the base, you know, to put it, or the MAGA people do seem to be pretty pissed off about, you know.
It's the first time that there seems to be a generalized anger at Trump.
At Trump, not at the Democrats, but at Trump, particularly for selling out, being a traitor. You know, he's just like the swamp. He's just like the rest of them.
I've seen the phrase Commander and Soy being thrown around on Twitter.
I
didn't say it. If the president's listening to this, this one was not me attacking you. This was someone else on Twitter.
I did see Mike Cernovich tweet today, Pelosi is alpha.
What is happening?
So he's saying
Lyndon Johnson said, when I lose Mike Cernovich, I lost the American people.
Napa Valley mindset.
Yeah. It seems like they're being cocked, you know?
They got cocked. There's no way around it. And it was the Democrats by miraculously not folding after this long period, because you just got to, I think everyone just assumed they were going to blink. I know I did. But then their brave act of just not doing anything was matched by the actual bravery of some federal workers and people in allied industries finally putting their fucking foot down and saying, we're not going to fucking go to work anymore without a goddamn paychecks.
It was like 2 hours of LGA having delays. Right?
Yeah.
Philadelphia and the head of the air stewards union.
Because
they would not go to work.
People pointed this out, but if you want to fuck with rich people, if you want to fuck with the ruling class in this party, you got to fuck with air travel. Like, that's what they do all day, is just go from fucking Delta Sky Elite lounges to first class cabins to other lounges to Pizzagate dungeons. That's their life.
And they will tweet if there's a delay.
There's an adrenochrome
at Delta.
It's like they're serving ortolan dipped in adrenochrome in the fucking Paris catacombs in 24 hours, and if I'm not there, I will fucking have you all kill. And so, infrastructure is how you actually grab them by the balls. And it really is inspiring.
You remember all of Charlie Kirk's tweets at United?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good.
So it's dispiriting to think that it took them a month to mobilize and get the commitment to
this.
This
is on the eve of the second missed paycheck.
And that all it was really is in the service of maintaining a status quo. But it really does speak to the genuinely disruptive potential of organizing key industries, which will be very important in the future, because it's not like these institutions are going to get any more cooperative once we reach crisis points with shit like climate and healthcare and things like that. And it's good to know that there are places where you can squeeze those huevos.
There are.
But I do hope that they make some sort of commitment that they're not going to wait another month if there's another fucking shutdown after the end of this negotiation period if they don't get somewhere with it. Because they have to be committed to being like, no, we're not going through this again.
Yeah, they're feeling the ropes
now. Trump, when we all saw him shuffle out there on Friday in the Rose Garden, looking like a high school student who had just been caught smoking weed or something, and like has to, your parents are like, are you high right now? And you have to just be like, yes. obviously Trump, the idea that he gets up the next morning, he watches his 4 hours of executive time TV, and everyone's saying Trump caved, Pelosi won, and he can't stand that. And I saw him tweet the other day, like, everyone's saying that this is a cave. No way. I genuinely believe we need to help the workers, and this will make the good negotiations. But if after 30 days there's no deal for
it's
the
not
wall.
It's a cave. It's a grotto, folks.
He goes. We're off to the races again. So, what do you think the likelihood is that we just go a month and then we do it all over again?
I don't think it'd be like this. I think Matt is correct that now that labor leaders have had these meetings and they have a plan for if things get screwed up again. There's also going to be a couple weeks of here's what it's like to wind the machine back up. Here are the million people, literally a million people who didn't get paid and couldn't spend money, and here's the money lost in the economy. It just didn't work. He had one shot to do this, so he could keep doing it. But what was unnerving for the White House is that so many times, in so many ways, they're impervious to anything but what's on Fox News, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is a dynamic. Every week, I feel like people forget, the polls are going to be bad. And every week I say, he doesn't care. Lou Dobbs is going to tell him he won. Sean Hannity's going to tell him he looks amazing. Jeanine Pirro is going to tell him it's time. It's like time to cut the tall trees, et cetera. Like, yeah. Like he has this different. It's really cliched, but just like the essential truth is he watches TV and they say you're doing great. And this time they were still saying he was doing great, and it just was like untenable because other people around him were saying actually the polls are bad. And also, I never get into the whole like Jared and Ivanka are secretly saying this and backing away, but this is like the 90th time that Kushner has said he had a plan and it blew up. So I don't, and he's still there. So the next time he says like, oh, you just need to give an Oval Office speech, and it's well, that's not how he talks. It's a much higher voice.
You got to get in there.
Yeah. Kushner's plan was to bust out Blue Star Airlines until the stock hit 20, but then the union reps walked in his office and pulled support.
So, Dave, out of those two competing narratives, and as far as I could tell at the by the end of the day Friday, those were the two basic narratives for why the shutdown ended, Republicans in the Senate revolting versus grassroots labor action, what do you believe actually ended the shutdown?
I think the labor and the airport moves the air traffic controller moves, that was the moment when things became real and they had to bail on it. But no, it was
like the country would not function anymore.
Yeah, but Pelosi pulling people back was important. There's a really stupid fight happening on Twitter, which is let that settle in. For a second. All right, now that your mind's blown. No, but there are people already like the Pelosi stans who used to be Hillary stans have kind of moved over are like, how dare anyone not give her all the credit? And it's like, no, I think this discussion here has laid it out. She got people not to break, but if people were just working without pay, this would probably still be going on because there's this theory that, you know, the Daily Caller anonymous op-ed. Did you guys read that?
Yeah, what's that?
So there were many like why the shutdown's good takes. The one that actually circulated was.
Oh, this, I remember this.
Yeah. So there's this guy who did, I assume guy, didn't identify who he was, but wrote it was like the bizarro version of the New York Times. I'm an anonymous Trump official. And it was, I'm an anonymous Trump official. The deep state sucks. The government sucks too. And this shutdown proves that 80% of these people are useless, so we should use the shutdown to fire them all and prove that you could shrink the government down to the size of a bathtub. And I'm like barely paraphrasing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was the take. And that was
a Mick Mulvaney-ass take.
Yeah,
right
there. Yeah. And that was still in the bloodstream until it was like, oh, you can't fly anymore.
Like, yeah. Like you said, like, imagine what would happen if you just shut down the air travel system in America.
Well, that's the thing. It's everyone says, oh, non-essential. Look, you guess you don't really need these people. Yeah, they were still working. They just weren't getting paid. Yeah. They were still going to work.
They were volunteering.
That's what Larry Kudlow said.
That was the best news cycle. That was the real garbage time. Was not just him, but in like the space of an hour, both Wilbur Ross and Larry Kudlow, both of whom look like Thomas Nast cartoons. like both vests and bow ties.
Literally
and,
just a money bag head.
But both of them saying, actually, you know, these people are just volunteering their work because they love the government so much. And you know, if they don't have groceries now, they can just, you know, tell them they're good for it.
Because
you know?
That's
put
what Trump said.
On the market. Yeah.
Because he think. Oh, and it's funny. That quote, if you look at that, the quote where they asked Trump about Ross and then he just started freestyling.
Yeah.
You get out of it the broad idea that he's thinking of maybe like an episode of the Andy Griffith Show or something where, you know, the neighborly grocer has a little list with everyone's name on. He's like, Mrs. Kravitz, how you doing? Oh, yeah, I know you're a little light this week. You could get, you know, a pound of butter and a quart of milk. But you still had to really work to get that out of it because there was no subject in that sentence. Like there was no, like if a teacher had tried to diagram the sentence he said, they wouldn't have been able to find anything. He was just saying there's grocers and, you know, the people, they know you and they make allowance and they do a thing. I mean, it was barely English. He really is sundowning now before noon at this point. But that was an amazing news cycle where him and the rest of the billionaire assholes who in his administration were just telling people who hadn't gotten paid in a month that it was okay. Either they should take out a loan or that like Floyd the Barber should float them some credit at the fucking the dry goods store.
It's something
because Trump thinks that America, every part of America, is either a Mad Max hellscape of people getting decapitated by MS-13 or it's the town from fucking Green Acres. Those are the only two places in America.
Well, he also had no backup on this because, like, I don't, he didn't have many good moments in the shutdown, but one they tried was pulling out. Remember the press conference where he's surrounded by like seven bald men?
Yeah, that was great. That was
right. Yes. He's surrounded by the border guards, and they're like, Mr. President, we're willing to take this for the team. We're willing to not get paid. Our members stand behind you, et cetera, et cetera. And I think he might have expected there'd be like waves of that, of people who've been waiting for the blue-collar billionaire president, which is a thing that his like,
Mr. President, oh, yeah. Sir, I will gladly pour out water in the desert meant for refugees on my free time.
Yeah, of course they'll work for free. Their job is pushing people around. Yeah. And they get to enact their violent fantasy.
Yeah, they would pay for the privilege of doing that shit.
You know, they really thought there'd be more of that, and there wasn't. Like everyone forgets, in the Oval Office speech, he said, like, call your congressman. And, you know, it's weird. They kind of have to tell you the truth. When you ask if a Republican calls the office, they do track it for some reason. It's not even, I don't know why they do. I would lie if I was a congressman, but they don't lie. And no one called. Like, no one was melting the switchboards to say we want the wall. Just like, he didn't have this public support. He didn't have people. On the other hand, were a million people who are like, who they kept making fun of. Like, Republicans kept going on CNBC and making fun of, like, the elite liberal federal employees who make like $30,000 a year to process Social Security checks and stuff, right? And they were like vocal and protesting and stuff, but like the CBP guys just like disappeared.
I think it's funny, like to the question, like to the anonymous Daily Caller thing about like, you know, what federal employees really are non-essential. And I would say like the bald guys who like the back of their neck looks like a pack of hot dogs who are like, I will patrol the border. I will pay you to do that, sir. Are genuinely non-essential. But then like, forget the TSA people. Terrifying to think like, okay, there's just no air travel, mm-hmm. or God forbid, like, you know, someone gets a bomb on an airplane or something like that. I was more like, think about like FDA, like food inspection, oh, yeah. and things like that. Like
it all, but by the end, it was like the Simpsons educational film where the world has no zinc. Yeah. The guy tries to like blow his brains out, and the bullet doesn't work. Yeah. Come back, zinc. It felt like that because it's like, oh, all these things that I just take for granted. Yeah. Are some sad bureaucrat in like a processing center in like Dubuque, he does this, and people like, start to realize that.
Who's the people, yeah, like making what, 30, 40 grand a year to like make sure that like arugula doesn't kill you? Like, yeah. I just, like,
sir, I am proud to die of arugula poisoning before your wall, sir. So I am proud to shit my guts out.
So, Dave, looking forward in the next 3 weeks, do you think that the Democrats will try to cut some kind of deal, or will they will just come back to this point and say, we won last time, we'll win this time, so fuck off?
Like, they've got a serious body high from how this ended.
Yeah.
It really felt like, because, you know, like, the 2018 election was a little bit, like, midterm night, it wasn't clear how well they did, so they were nervous. In 2016, they still wake up, like, screaming, like, like the Sigourney Weaver flashback to Alien. Like, so, but then this was the first time they just were, like, straight up gloating. And I feel like even when that wears off, there might be a little bit, because the debate among Democrats is it used to be border security money not for a wall means whoever, who cares?
Yes.
But since Trump became president, it means that's free money for CBP agents, for ICE to round people up, and that's like untenable.
Yes.
And I don't know, I think people, activists, need to like be clear they don't want any border security money.
Yeah.
Yes. There are some people who are going to break and say, we beat them on the wall, so just like give them some drones. Who cares? Give them some like your
anti-personnel mines.
That's arguably worse, in my view. And I was afraid that that's what the Democrats' compromise would be. Oh, we'll just spend $1 billion.
Yeah.
We'll hire 1,000 more border guards who we can never fire. We can never lay these people off because we would look so bad. You give them money for fucking security fencing, well, that can just be destroyed, never built, or fall into disrepair.
Or the immigration courts, which is like a liberal thing. Not liberal. Democrats say they want more immigration judges because the courts are blocked up, and that's bad. Well, that would mean like you processing even more quickly. People you're separating and kicking out of the country. Where there are all these little. Because Jeff Sessions is gone, it's not clear if the Trump administration like knows what to do with this border money. Steve Miller's still there. He knows what to do.
Oh, yeah.
But like that's the next phase of this is, well, the wall's gone. He's embarrassed. But like, are Democrats going to accidentally let him fund, you know, double the size of the Border Patrol? But like, because they keep kind of doing that in every immigration bill they pass. The reason there's the fence now is that Bush was like, well, I'm going to do something later. But in the meantime, you have like just 700 miles of fence.
And then Hillary and Obama both voted for that.
People. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this was the trap Obama kept falling into was like, I will eventually get immigration by just deporting people more than any other president ever so that people take me seriously. I'm like, I think Democrats' mindset is still kind of there.
Yeah.
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 I mean, obviously, we said we were surprised that they held fast on this and gave up nothing. But obviously, like, I was expecting to do that, and I'm expecting them to come to like some kind of bad compromise rather than just, you know, doing the Michael Corleone thing. Like, here's my offer, Senator, nothing, mm-hmm. not even the money for the bribe. But like, do you think like their behavior, you know, like Pelosi and Schumer, they're feeling their oats. Like, what do you think that has to do with like 2016? How do you view like the Democratic Party as they are now versus like just even 2 years ago? Has like some sort of internal gravity shifted? Do they feel a little bit more like with their, I mean, obviously they have like a little pressure on their left flank from some of the like AOC, obviously, and the more popular young people in the party now?
No, they totally do. And when it comes to immigration, because Trump is so unpopular and everything that he talks about becomes less popular, this consensus they used to have where we can't possibly do immigration reform without being convincing that trucker hat guy at our town hall that we're serious, that's quieted down just because Trump's made it so much less popular. Like, yeah. Polling on the wall, like, it peaks at 42% or something. And you ever see that like Matt Borges cartoon where people are like looking and watching for like the gay marriage polls to crack 60%?
Yeah.
That's how they all think. That's how every Democrat thinks. So immigration is now, it's gone from a thing they're constantly worried about to where this Congress they have, you know, they don't have the Senate, but like there's no one they elected to the House who has to go home and answer to angry people about immigration, especially the ones in like the suburbs of Houston hate the wall. Like, all their constituents hate this. So on this, they've actually, I think they've moved left probably for good until like some future president needs to sign up like the RoboCop project in order to get like amnesty for people, right? Yeah.
So do you sense a real realignment within the Democratic coalition on border security overall?
But it's like a version of what happened under, like, when Obama becomes president, like half of Republicans are like, well, of course climate change is real and we need to do a carbon tax or something. Maybe it's like the Newt Gingrich doesn't add with Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
Where they're sitting for some reason on a couch, like on in the middle of the mall. Which is not there. If you go look
they're
for
that in two separate bathtubs, like a Cialis commercial.
Yeah.
Overlooking a sunny field.
But then Trump, Obama's president, is like, well, let me be clear. Climate change is real. And every Republican's like, you, sir, are a communist. We're not for this. Like, a version of that has happened with Democrats where if Trump does it, they're like, our base hates this guy. If he's for it, we're done. And that's like blown up 10 or 12 things they would have compromised on, I think.
But it's like on the other side, like we talked a little bit about, you know, Trump, at least as far as like Congress and like passing any kind of like agenda seems to be kind of a spent force as other than just a rubber stamp for like vampires from the Federalist Society basement or whatever. But like, yeah, like as we said, this thing on the wall does seem to be like the red line for like the real diehards, like the real MAGA nation. And I'm wondering, like, what do you think a post-Trump like MAGA movement or like that part of the, which is I think the majority of the Republican mm-hmm. Party, like right. Where do you see that going? Like, do they continue their like momentum and vision like without Trump as a figurehead, or do they kind of fracture or just become even more sort of like insular and poisonous in their own little conclaves?
It's a good question, because when people thought he would lose, I thought that the momentum would continue and like President Tom Cotton in 2021.
That is my Martin Sheen dead zone fucking scenario.
But like, they were going to be more strategic and say the new Republican position is like 1920 immigration levels and like mm-hmm. kicking out people who got here because of the Haitian boat people and Cuban. It's things that Trump has done, but kind of like haphazardly.
Yeah.
I thought they would be more explicit. And it's like they've stumbled on that. Like the whole point of punishing Steve King was to create running room to like attack Rashida Tlaib.
Yeah, and Louis Farrakhan,
right?
Democrats like him.
Yeah, but I think they're actually a little bit listless right now and don't know what to do. But that's where I thought this was going to end up. I don't know if Trump's ruined it, but there's like the Steve Miller wing of the party runs things, and I don't know when they were going to give it up. Even if Trump loses, conservatism can never fail. It can only be failed.
Even if he did it wrong. Yeah, if he loses in 2020, it's hard for me to imagine the animating force, the idea of like the wall and what it symbolizes for these people. It's hard for me to imagine that going away or them moving on to something else.
After Trump is defeated, he will die on the toilet, but they will believe that he is the occluded Mahdi. who will return one day on a golden horse to bring the wall with him. It's going to happen.
I think what happens is all of this energy there gets dispersed, and there's no one with the sort of magnetic appeal of Trump for you know, all of these right wingers to climb on.
The energy will be there. The ideology is not going anywhere. But the thing that made Trump able to break through and reorient the whole base was the fact that he was this in this incredibly unique position of being an incredibly wealthy and, more importantly, super famous outsider who didn't have any institutional buy-in with the Republican Party or and they had no leverage over him. Mm. And that gave him this unique position. If he falls, presumably everyone who's going to be trying to grab his mantle is just going to be an RNC slug.
Yeah.
And they're not going to have the freedom of movement he had. So none of them are going to really be able to give him the real resin that he was
giving. I think what happens in the short term, we go back to this period of Republicans just pandering to those people.
Right.
And, you know, we'll get maybe more nominees like McCain or Romney. The base knows is fundamentally not on their side, but they, you know, sing the right notes for them. And I think kind of we'll see more lunatic right-wing billionaires just running for president. Why not?
But they will but they're going to realize that the missing ingredient is not being independently wealthy. It's being famous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like Steve Forbes is a billionaire. Nobody gave a shit. What animated them is that he was the guy on TV who did deals.
Well, the thing about Trump is he is the real deal. He is also just a sundowning old white man.
Right. He is as dumb as them.
He says things that are word for word Free Republic posts from 2002.
Yeah. He believes the exact same things. Even weirder, no. It's like a DVR Fox and Friends, and he will just quote what they said about him and say, thanks. and they're not going to get that again. I don't think, if they nominate Liz Cheney, they're not going to do that. Yeah.
I mean, nobody saw Trump coming. Who knows?
You combine the money of some right-wing billionaire with a right-wing celebrity.
Yes.
James Woods.
Robert Davi.
Are you out? The Dean Cain? He's got presidential looks.
So it either has to be an old white man who's extremely unwell and famous or an extremely talented character actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
James Woods.
How about James Woods? If he could, but the problem is he would need somebody to back him. I think the Mercers might have gotten burned now.
Yeah.
They might end up having to pay some of those tax money.
You get Sheldon Adelson's money.
Yeah.
James Woods's brain disease. He's out there tweeting about race war like every day.
Oh, yeah. No, he's at the furthest edge.
Yeah.
He's pretty famous. But the thing is he's not really famous anymore. That's the thing. Who's as famous as Trump was when he declared?
And
Trump had been famous
for
30 years and was famous for being the deals guy.
Yeah.
Golden toilet real estate man.
No, remember they tried to continue The Apprentice with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, and it died.
He was one of the most famous people in the world, and it didn't click.
Yeah.
Who had also had his own like sex scandals and everything. Like, they were like, this, it made sense. Like, often something fails, and you're like, well, of course that wasn't going to work.
Like, Trump
couldn't carry on.
Schwarzenegger bears a lot of similarities with Trump. However, but like, late era Schwarzenegger, his whole brand is like positivity.
Yeah.
he's he's been working with the Special Olympics forever. He's all about like, you know, if you have the discipline, you can achieve anything. And like, he just does Twitter videos where he's like lifting weights.
His big issue is getting rid of gerrymandering.
Getting rid of gerrymandering and climate change.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he does like Instagram videos where he's like congratulating people on like, you know, meeting their weight loss goals or like bench pressing 300 for the first time.
I mean, Trump did do that with Steve Scalise. He congratulated him for losing weight by getting shot. That's a thing that happened.
God, I remember that.
That reminds me. Does he have a classmate bag?
I don't know. I don't think he does. I would not look.
But no, the reason the Schwarzenegger Apprentice failed is because like Schwarzenegger didn't have like the spite and cruelty that what Trump has when you're fired.
Yeah.
When you're just firing people and
originally
the
Apprentice
them.
Was supposed to have a different host every year when they originally pitched it. They were gonna have a different billionaire every year. But then the first season they had Trump and they're like, we can't have anybody.
You know the guy who hosts the British Apprentice is Lord Sugar.
Lord Sugar. Who is what like threatened to
that?
Leave
he's
the country?
The sugar fortune. What do you blame your coffee?
He's the guy who stole. He's the guy who stole a Hober sugar at the end of the episode.
Wait, like from the Roald Dahl story? Who is like Lord Sugar?
It's Lord Sugar.
Okay, his name is Lord Sugar.
Those two words to you, and you close your eyes, you can conjure a man in like a purple top hat.
Yeah.
99% chance he's a pedophile. The 1% is to avoid getting sued. No, he has said that he will take his fortune and leave the UK if Corbyn becomes prime minister.
Cool. That's why you need capital controls.
Yeah. And then you got, isn't the one in Canada, Mr. Wonderful, the guy who...
Oh, Kevin O'Leary.
Kevin O'Leary.
The Shark Tank guy who ran for... He came at like 5 votes away from leading the Conservative Party
in
Canada.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Yes.
I don't know why he didn't, honestly.
I know. I guess Canada, maybe they didn't want to take the plunge all the way and become us.
Well, they're like beta testing it by having the Fords run the biggest province.
Yeah, that's true.
How many Fords are there? Because it's the two main ones.
One of them's dead. Now his brother is the premier of Ontario.
But that's it. There's no more Fords, yeah?
I mean, they have kids, presumably, those are the main Fords.
If anyone has like a large sons, I'm sure the Ford family has figured.
I'm sure there's some large sons. Well,
they were the original large sons.
Yeah,
they were Bobo and Little Devil from Nothing But Trouble.
Is the brother also a drug guy?
Yeah, no, they both sold drugs when they were kids. That's confirmed. Oh, they were drug dealers.
But I mean, is he like party now?
He doesn't party like his brother did. No,
no one parties like his brother.
No,
he's
not smoking crack while being provincial governor. No. But no, that's the thing. It's like you think about it and you're like, how do you recreate this? How do you who becomes the standard bearer? And it really does remind you of how unique a figure Donald Trump is in American history. Like he is sui generis, you know, sui generis. There's nobody like Trump. Nobody meets all the criteria. There are people who are like 3 out of 4 or whatever. Nobody hits every tick the way that Trump does. And as a result, he's the only guy who could have come into the political scene and just upended it and just destroyed everything.
Speaking of guys who do party for sure, I'd like to segue now to the other big news story from this weekend. Roger Stone, folks. We're talking about essential and non-essential government employees. Boy, the FBI without a paycheck certainly turned out like I don't know a platoon of men in tanks to fucking raid the Fort Lauderdale home of a fucking agent.
That's kind of how they raid everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like if you just commit some light Medicare fraud, it's like you get.
Remember that
dude with the stick of the MP5 in Elian Gonzalez's face?
Again, they have a fun job, so who gives a shit that they work for free? They get to push people around with guns.
They do like you see them in all that in that gear with the helmets and you think that's not necessary, but you go in that house, you could easily slip on some lube and smack your head.
Well, not only that, I also...
surface is viscous.
If anyone has, like, a Dick Tracy villain suit that's, like, Kevlar-coated and stuff, it would be Roger Stone. So, those precautions were necessary.
Yeah, if Roger Stone were a pinhead villain, he'd be, like, pinhead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also do, like, you know, we all... I'd be ridiculous. They're, like, rappelling in through his window, be like... Put down that sex kimono. Put down the sex kimono. Put your hands in the air.
Has anyone put that music that they use for the We Got Him meme, by the way, over that? Because they should.
But I do like it whenever like an elderly conservative gets the SWAT team treatment. They're like, this is a disgusting like overreach of law enforcement powers. But like Dave, as you read, like not just the FBI, like local cops do that to people who have a nickel bag of weed or whatever. Like this is just what they do.
Oh yeah, it's like it's save this treatment for the black guy who bought a cigarette. That's basically the mode. But all the things, even my favorite part of the Stone story was it was one of the things you could see this happening. The bad Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movie where you could see like the 7 punches coming.
Yeah.
Because like Greta Van Susteren tweets like, how did CNN know that he might get raided? She said this about a guy who was giving media interviews every day saying on a Friday he was probably going to get raided and arrested. Like he'd have Instagram posts with like himself and in suits and like giving a thumbs up saying, come get me Mueller. There. So like CNN sends a guy from their bureau an hour away. Greta Van Susteren's like, they had to be tipped off. And then that gets amplified by other people who are like, she's asking questions. She has credibility. And I was like, when is Trump going to do it? And then 2 hours later, Trump is like, well, clearly, was there collusion? And just says it. We kind of move on. But like that was my favorite part of this was a thing that all local news is based on, which is assuming that the cops are going to raid somebody. It happens to Roger Stone. It's got to be the Pizzagate. It's got to be the world elite. The lizard people who tipped him off.
So, essentially, he's being indicted by Mueller for acting as a go-between between WikiLeaks and the Donald Trump and the Trump campaign.
And like, it's more repeatedly lying about it.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's the thing.
Most of the accounts were lying to Congress, right?
Because this is the spin is like the very serious spin by there's like a cohort of conservative writers who kind of didn't like Trump but bought in, and they're now like wondering what to do, so they're just going all in, saying. I don't see how this proves anything, given that all it says is he repeatedly lied to federal investigators in Congress, which is not the same as rigging the election. That's the spin they're going with.
But isn't that anyone who's seen the Roger Stone documentary, which is very entertaining, that was a very fun watch. But this Stone's whole MO is talk like pretending to be a master criminal, but really being like a level one crook. Like he's like he's on that boss shit. He loves people thinking that you know he's the Penguin.
Well, I mean, not only does he love it,
dresses like
he's a level one guy in the Mafia City.
yeah.
But not only does he love it, it's the cornerstone of his business model.
Yeah, exactly.
He scams political operatives into thinking that he has more influence than he does.
And like I take it as read that he is a criminal and has broken the law. But like the question is like, what does he ever actually do? You know, like what's really there? And it's again almost impossible to tell with someone like Roger Stone, who is just an inveterate bullshitter and liar.
Well, during the election, so remember Trump, like he emerges, and a lot of people in the press are like, "Oh, what's going to happen with this? It's going to drop out at some point." But Roger Stone's the only connection everyone knows to him, and he's very like he gives everyone his email address and his number, so all these reporters would call and text him, and I would during the campaign call him sometimes for stories, and I've always gone back and wondered why I didn't take it more seriously, but it was always buffoonish. And when it came to like WikiLeaks, he would just like tweet mysteriously that he knew something that was coming from WikiLeaks. It would come out and he would take credit for it. So now he's like trying to dial back and say he never did this thing that like a million reporters talked to him during the process of him doing it. He was like, he loved, especially because I don't think he would have been as excited about Julian Assange if he was not in the Ecuadorian embassy. But the fact that Assange also had like rape charges and was a fugitive just made him more badass. So that was his role. He was like the media friendly go between on stuff being stolen from the Clinton campaign.
Right. But isn't that the root of this, all of the insinuation that in some way, shape or form, the Trump campaign directed the hacking of the Clinton campaign, the DNC?
Well, Trump was on video saying he hoped it would happen, but then like just the people connected to Trump knew about this. Also, there's, you know, Trump more than most people, there's official people who work for him. And then everyone knows he's on the phone with Sean Hannity like an hour a day, and Sean Hannity doesn't work for him. So everyone knows that they'll like deny he talks to Stone, but Stone, like, again, spreads his credibility. Like, Stone got him to go on InfoWars. Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah. And so, like, they can't really dial this back because they just all live streamed. They have this, like, long Periscope and Twitter record of the crime doing. And I don't know why they're trying to spin it back. Now, Stone's smart because Stone's not spinning it. Stone's just saying, I was framed, and this was illegal, and literally doing like the Nixon V for victory.
Yeah.
Like he's gonna
another famously innocent guy,
and he's gonna just like expect to be pardoned like January 20th, 2021.
Okay.
Right?
I think that's his play. How many forensic investigators do you think the FBI loses because they task them with going through hours of InfoWar footage, and they just learn too much about the truth, and their mind expands, and they realize I can't be a part of the deep state anymore.
That's why the frogs are gay. I can imagine that.
This is a little bit of trivia here. I found out today that Roger Stone's lawyer, a guy who's representing named Robert Bushell, is also an author who wrote a fellow author who wrote a novel that came out in 2016 called By Silent Majority. It's called By Silent Majority, and I want to just read you the jacket copy for this book. President Daniel Carson is the most popular president in history, but he has a secret big enough to bring down his whole administration. It wasn't the marijuana he smoked after graduating from Harvard. It wasn't the fact that he won the presidency with the help of computer phenoms hired to hack into an electronic voting source code. It wasn't that his family, his political family, wasn't pure.
Electronic source code? Continue.
Electronic voting source code.
A little bit overwritten, but okay.
It wasn't that his political family wasn't pure. Only days before the vote for his next election, his chief of staff informs him, "They know, Daniel. Dreams will be shattered. Lives are in danger. Can America handle the truth?"
Yes.
So I had to look around a little bit. Like I was like, what's the secret?
Yeah, I need to know the secret.
Because
it seems like hacking voting rolls is a pretty big secret.
I looked into it. The secret is the president is gay. this is just a review from bestthrillers.com. It says here, the precise era in which the book takes place isn't clearly defined, but it seems to be sometime between 1980 and the fall of the Soviet Union. The novel's success or failure hinges, at least in part, on one question. If Carlson's secret had been Ronald Reagan's, would Reagan have made it to a second term?
What if Reagan was
sus? So he's doing the speculative like counter history of like, what if Ronald Reagan was sus, though?
What if instead of selling arms to Iran, he was gay? The real crime. If he committed a real crime like that. Oh man, how much is this?
It is actually out of stock on Amazon right now. But if you're, I think, a Prime Kindle Unlimited
for the electronic
member,
source code,
you can get it
Kindle.
For free if you're a Kindle Unlimited member.
Thank you, Jeff Bezos.
Sorry.
So here's the thing about Stone that I don't get, and for a lot of these guys, Stone is not someone in the government. He is not accountable to anyone. Why the fuck did he talk? Not just talk to investigators, but testify to Congress?
I mean, I think you identify. That's his brand. Like, if he was hiding from the press and not, like, swaggering in front of people, going on TV immediately after being arrested.
But you can lie to the press. That's not illegal. You can't lie to Congress.
I've heard of it happening, yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just doing Occam's razor that this is always what he's done. He's done away with it. But after seeing Manafort go to jail for, like, Manafort, who he was a partner with, who had done this for years, I don't know why he didn't get a little bit more careful. On the right, remember, his connection to InfoWars explains so much because he's all in on the deep state and how no crime anyone in this orbit commits is real because we're being undermined by agents of chaos who are trying to stop us from making America great. Like, I to the extent he believes that, I don't know, but he's the voice who goes on to co-hosted Alex Jones all the time.
Even Jerome Corsi, he was subpoenaed. He went to Congress and he just pled the fifth. And that's it. He didn't do any lies. You shouldn't talk to the police even if you're innocent and don't intend to lie to them. Like drug dealers know that. But all of these guys are like, "Yeah, I'll talk to Mueller. I'll talk to Congress. What the hell? I've got nothing to hide." No, you've been doing billions of crimes.
It is amazing. You don't have to.
You don't have
them.
To. Just saying, I'm not cooperating with
you don't all of these guys
them.
Have gone down for lying and none of them had to do it. Papanopoulos didn't have to talk to anybody. Manafort's was fucked because they uncovered the fact that he was massive amounts of financial crime.
But if you're subpoenaed, though, like you have to like...
Yeah, but you can plead the fifth.
Okay, you can plead the fifth. Mm. That's not necessarily like a ironclad like protection against going to jail.
But it protects you against going to jail for perjury.
For perjury.
For lying, which is what they're all getting caught for. They're not getting caught for crimes. They're getting caught for lying about crimes. So don't say anything, and you can't go to jail for lying about crimes.
Roger, if you're listening, don't talk to anybody. Stay strong.
Roger, if you're listening, I am 6 feet uncut.
Six
I'm
feet.
A military
Jesus
man.
Christ. But he's not going to listen to that because he was on CNN that fucking night after he made bail. He can't not talk. He's compulsive. Like I was saying, it's because it's the way he's been able to keep a career going because he never has had the influence or abilities or connections he claimed he had.
Yeah.
His career is entirely based on bluffing and bullshit, and now it's finally, in an incredibly delicious irony, caught up to him.
Well, because he's the original like lib owner because he never cared about what happens after you win.
No.
He just likes making the left sad, but he was on that in the 60s, like really early.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was like, how can we break up the Great Society? And he didn't care. He just wanted to make liberals lose stuff. So he never wanted to join administration. He just wanted to do mischief, which got 50 years of it. That's not that bad.
But now there's dozens of guys like that.
Yeah.
Hundreds.
MWM seeks rough trade with FBI. actually on that, what is up with both Roger Stone and Paul Manafort are like sex maniacs who get off on their wife
Manafort is?
Yeah,
Manafort's way worse because from what we
they're like into
understand,
that wife sharing.
Roger Stone and his wife are both kinky. He likes to watch her have sex with men and she's into it. According to his kids, Manafort basically made his wife have sex with other men.
Drugged her,
Jesus!
Yeah. No, he was
it's
way
very,
worse.
Very dark. Yeah. But yeah,
he's a real, real piece of work.
I remember when Manafort joined the Trump campaign, and this is when Trump was still considered a sideshow and at best an embarrassment at worst.
Even though
and everyone got mad at him because Manafort is a professional. He's a professional GOP.
He worked for Bob Dole, the greatest Republican of his era.
He's an upstanding guy. How dare you lie down with his filth?
And then it turns out, he was just doing nothing but crimes for the last 30 years.
Nothing but crimes.
So, Dave, I do want to talk a little bit about, because we are the official, mouthpiece for Bernie Sanders.
Yes. Which,
can't
and for
that...
racism,
yeah,
I'm told. Yeah.
Well, they go, it's like chocolate and peanut butter. They can't have one without the other. There seems to be some, mutterings today, like Bernie is going to announce for 2020.
If he books a flight to Philadelphia, Mississippi, that's how we'll know he's going to announce.
But that's a deep cut.
You were saying earlier that like the people are jumping the gun on this is premature or just he's not ready to do it.
He wasn't ready to do it like yesterday. So there's this Yahoo story. I'm not going to like knock the hustle because you do this. You talk to reporters. You talk to people around a candidate because they're not going to admit stuff. If you just like wait for a spokesman to say stuff, like you're not doing journalism. So Yahoo News had this like scoop. He's about to announce imminently, and imminent's like a word that literally means about like right now, but it's very loose in this headline. He's been leaning more towards it. I'm told that like a month ago he had some more doubts about it. It wasn't just like the sexual harassment allegations, because like every campaign for 2016 was hit by that. It was just like people got into the race with similar positions, which is not the case last time. We're getting ahead of steam. Polls show he's like popular, but he's like not where he was in 2016, like toward the end. And so I talked to him this week on Tuesday and just asked him like, so why would you run against Elizabeth Warren? Like I know the difference between their philosophies, but he said what people who like him, like Amber's essay frankly says, like his philosophy is very different. His philosophy for what you need to change and dismantle is different than hers.
Yeah.
Like he's for breaking up the banks and she's for smarter regulation. A number of these things. He is for like a total rethinking of our economic system. He's for Medicare for all in 4 years as opposed to public option. So he's like, there's still a space where like it's going to be hard. But he always prefaces it like in this conversation too. He prefaces it saying it's going to be incredibly hard, like harder than last time. And I think he believes that. He's like, unlike last time where he comes in, he's just the fun underdog until the very end. This is like he's more hated than ever by wealthy people who like thought he was a goof last time. The polls show that Trump is like weaker than ever. So he's anticipating like $200 million beating him up, exposing his, and he's also very protective of his family.
Yeah.
So he watches his wife
and the crimes that his wife has done.
The
colleges she stole.
Yeah, she stole a university in upstate Vermont.
So he,
investigators believe it's hidden at the bottom of Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
There are frogmen trying to find the location of the stolen university. They found part of a dorm with her name etched in it.
But that drove him nuts, the tension on that, which is apparently over. But because it got like the anti-Bernie Twitter was like couldn't stop talking about that for a year. Not that he reads Twitter, but he's aware that he made enemies. But he's like if he comes out. The conversation I had was, you know, if he feels like he can win and no one else is going to do what he's going to do, he's going to run. So he's probably going to run.
He's got to do it.
Yeah.
But I think you mentioned on Twitter, or you know, people got some stick for this. You mentioned that like if you compare where they were in 2016, it does seem like he has pushed the Democratic Party on like that. Every Democratic, like Kamala Harris is saying, "I'm for Medicare for all now."
Like Julian Castro, yeah. Who knew? Castro, who like no one thought that people didn't have anything against him, but
the
he was like
currency
a,
man.
Yeah, I mean he was like a Clinton guy who was doing whatever was popping the party and. He's entered politics of 2019 by saying, I too am a democratic socialist, basically, right?
Which tells you that, Medicare for All means nothing now. And the fight over the next 2 years is going to be actually defining it and having real parameters and a real structure to it that you can't just make an amorphous
gesture. Yeah, that's the issue. But it has clearly become like something you put on a panel.
It's a huge movement forward.
Door.
To make it something people are talking about, even co-opting, is huge. But it that's what this process does. It's supposed to reveal what these are beyond the slogans. Beyond them being like, you young people, you like these three words in a row, right?
But, and you know, also to Amber's point, like this is something he's been on for like decades now, his entire political career, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, he trusts Warren more than he trusts Gillibrand and Harris. Mm-hmm. Like, he'll never trash them on the record or even off. He just hates that crap. But he does feel that there are people who have credibility on this and people who... You know, he's been here with Obama. Like Obama gets elected and he got all this stick in 2015 for just saying things like Obama's a great guy, but didn't build a consensus and go hard enough, which was like proof that the first evidence that he was a racist. He clearly was
Russian
like,
funded.
Yeah.
Compromise.
H.P. Lovecraft, like metaphors about about the races, like tucked into his speeches. You know, the first proof that he was truly evil was that he was like, you know, Obama could have done more. So, but that's like in the back of his head is like, what if we elect Obama too? And I'm here and I'm arguing for this. And they're like the first meeting they have with pharma, Like they were like, eh, I guess we can't go that hard. We're gonna like lower the Medicare age by 3 years for cops, and that's it.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
he's very worried about that.
Well, you know, he doesn't have to go on the record to attack people because you know he pays us money to do that, that for him on our podcast.
Yeah, check was late this month, Uncle Bernard. What are you doing?
As difficult as the road ahead is for him, I think he has probably the greatest asset of any of the 20 or so people who are going to run this year, which is that he has, from where I'm sitting, the highest floor out of any of the candidates. I think there's something on the level of 15 to 20% of Democrats, Democrat leading voters who could be expected to turn out in these primaries who are Bernie
ride or die. Yeah. I think that's true. I think he's, I mean, I think everyone else's support is either nascent still or incredibly soft, like Biden or something like that. Like
yeah.
Biden's support seems to me just people like, I remember that guy, the guy from the memes.
Oh,
he's so funny.
No, it's the evidence of how strong Biden is like how many people are piling in, just ignoring him. They're just a total confidence that once he gets in the race, he's going to start collapsing.
Yeah.
Among type Democrats. With Bernie, it's like a weird thing where they think there's a hope that he'll have his own pocket of voters and no one else will compete for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that like Warren can unite the other factions. But everyone was so wrong about this stuff last time that I hear less like chin stroking analysis of how they will outsmart him. It's more, I think what you hear a lot is, because I've been in Iowa like 3 times this year, and you hear people who voted for him before as a protest against Hillary, and they're not actually all in for the agenda. They're like, they like a thing about him. Or also, I mean, if you're talking to real voters is illustrative because most people don't know a lot about politics.
Oh, yeah.
And they think Bernie and Biden like believe the same stuff, and they like them both, but they want a young person who also believe. And if you go down like, well, here are the 6 issues that they're different on, they just glaze over.
Yeah.
That's a problem for him. I mean, like, he's no longer the protest candidate. But yeah, I don't. There are people who are hardcore and have never bailed. He might be a little bit too confident about that. Like, by not moving so fast, a bunch of people who might have worked for him are already on Team Warren.
Yeah.
And Warren's campaign right now, whatever you think of her, is like actually really taut at the signing people up, getting people to show up for stuff, getting not just a crowd of like 7 old white guys interested in her. Setting the policy agenda. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a cliche.
She's very proactive,
say
you know.
Yeah, like the wealth tax. She comes out with a wealth tax. It's like, there's discussion about that. And if Bernie was doing the same thing, right, he could have been doing the same thing. He's not. Like, she'd be
he should get
and
a bigger
that's
one.
The thing about it, because as much as the average voter who's not, you know, terminally online, has their brain poisoned like all of us here and all the Hillary stans or whoever, as much as they're ostensibly concerned with matters of image, like, oh, I guess I want a candidate who's young and maybe black, whatever.
Yeah. No, that's a real thing.
I do. Yeah. That's absolutely a real thing, and that's part and parcel with electoral politics. I do really believe that this campaign, once it heats up and once the candidates are going after each other, I really do believe it is going to be about substantial matters of not policy, but I would say broadly political morality.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, broad ideological issues.
Like, it's one of those things that you can imagine rolling the tape back a year from now, and they're debating something utterly stupid, like who stiffed the bill at like an Iowa diner. But
there's always going to be that.
But what I found with like, and I might be a Pollyanna. Like, I wasn't last cycle. I was all doomed last cycle. But just because they've gone through a cycle where they just respond to every Trump thing with like a Hillary would just like scrap her policy speech for the day to be like, a man who tweets that can't be in charge of our armed forces. Like, no one wants to do that anymore. Like, people are like, so I've seen Warren get like, why'd you do the DNA test question? She's like, yeah. And she gives like a 10-second response. He's like, well, we need to focus on other stuff. So they're not like going to be whipsawed by everything Trump does, which is going to drive him friggin' nuts.
I guess what I'm trying to say is in this election, I genuinely believe there will be an open debate. And this is unique in our lifetimes, an open debate about things that have been part of a consensus about capitalism
and
society, about whether or not billionaires should exist, about whether or not we should have a 70%, you know, top marginal tax rate, and whether there should be, you know, a massive federal jobs program, whether the government should, through intervention, break up the large banks, should become the only healthcare, you know, insurer in the country.
Not just break up large banks, but also break up Google and Facebook. Mm-hmm. As
Amazon.
Well, which is becoming a big issue, at least as they begin to eat all of your profession, Dave, or like shutter every local news, you know, outlet in the country.
And what I like,
people are more bold about that. And also, because Trump won, like, no one knows anymore what's the thing that's going to knock you out off the stage and be crazy. So I think people are of a little more willingness to just.
Oh, I hope they're all doing Dean screams all day just to see what happens. Just a bunch of guys going just.
And more than that, and also I think what's interesting is I think we will have a discussion about where these campaigns are taking money from.
Yeah.
I think like people will actually go in and start accusing each other of, oh, well, you take such and such money from the energy industry, you hold these fundraisers in the defense industry, or telecoms, or so on and so forth.
Yeah, this is why I don't know how Cory Booker's gonna do when he gets out there and talks to those voters.
He's gonna terribly.
He's gonna get old.
Yeah, it's kind of ominous.
It doesn't make any sense, the campaign.
So you've been to Iowa 3 times already. One question: what is Pizza Ranch like?
Oh, you've never been to one?
No, I've never been to a Pizza Ranch. There apparently are pizza ranches in Wisconsin, but I've never seen one.
So it's Pizza Hut plus fried chicken plus Christianity.
Okay. See, now that sounds good.
It is like an explicitly patriotic Christian chain. Like there are murals on the wall of the pioneers and stuff. But the feature
John
is
McNaughton paintings.
Yeah. Yeah. But the feature is like an all day buffet, which has all the pizzas you want that are like not Domino's quality, not amazing, really buttery crust, which is like, you know, kind of covering up how much they have to mass produce it. And then also for some reason, fried chicken.
Fried chicken and pizza.
But it's mostly, you go in, you pay like $5 for a buffet.
$5?
And I don't think it's going to be a thing this time because Republicans love it for the aforementioned Christianity reasons. And not that Democrats are anti, maybe they are now, who knows?
yeah, God is dead.
But
Piss Christ is going to be on part of Kamala Harris's campaign literature.
It never hit
the bumper
like,
sticker, do what thou wilt, and you thou shalt be thee.
It never hit like the Chick-fil-A level of like stigma if you're going to one, but they just don't go to them. Like Democrats go to every smallish town now has like somebody who came back to start like a coffee shop that has like lavender lattes. So they all go to that. They all embrace the cliche.
So no one's going to be at the Pizza Ranch because it's all the Democrats. Well, if we go to Iowa at some point, I'm still going
to
go.
We should go to Iowa.
Good. I'm getting the Pizza Ranch.
Okay. I'm not standing in the way of that.
They're worth trying once. I don't miss them. I definitely, all my memories of Pizza Ranches are just feeling just like I'd been swimming through grease after having one slice of it.
It doesn't sound good.
No.
Yeah, but a plate with a piece of pizza and fried chicken on it.
Is it ranch because it's like ranch dressing or is it like a ranch theme?
No, like the pioneers, the peopling of the West through, you know, Manifest Destiny and massacres.
Is there hay on the ground? Is it one of those?
As we all know, during the wagon trains, Cookie often had a Neapolitan brick oven that he brought with him to make the freshest pies for all the cowboys.
And
that's a mean margarita there, Cookie.
And Maroney said unto Joseph Smith, unbury these pizza stones, for they have the true word of God on them. They took that to Utah, and it worked out great.
Well, I guess to round things out today, you know, speaking of dead enders, I did see today that Hillary Clinton weighed in on the quote-unquote attacks on Kamala Harris, saying of them, it feeds into sexism and misogyny. She's been being attacked by the left. Enough. If you don't want to support Democrats, go somewhere else.
Okay. Probably not a great move for her to do that.
Vote for a third party.
Yeah.
But do not do that.
I never understand that. Because because I cover Bernie a lot. And there's like a contingent of Twitter that thinks I'm like his spokesman. And I'm not sure that Bernie likes the coverage that much. But it's like, it's useful to talk to him. And if he wanted to, he could like blow up the party by just saying, I'm out. I've created a new, like, there are people lobbying him all the time.
Yeah.
Like Cornel West and a bunch of his delegates set up a third party for him if he wants it. And he said no. So I don't know what the people who are like, if you don't like this, get out. No, he's like the only thing saving you. The fact he's going to like take his lumps if he doesn't win the nomination and not endorse the Green Party. That's great. Take it. I don't understand.
It is amazing. They say he's not a Democrat. Fuck you. And then if he were to run independently, their heads would explode.
Yeah,
like, they would just turn. They'd be scanners. They would be like, "How dare you?"
For many of the candidates right now, I don't think if they were to win the nomination, there would be a left third party movement, not a serious one. If it were Bloomberg or something, sure, but that's really an the exception.
Yeah, even Biden, I think, would be just because people are so. It's very hard to have a third party active, like when there's an incumbent Republican president who the base really hates.
Yeah,
like look at Nader's. Look at the Nader vote in 2004, just collapsed. So I don't think that's a threat. But the threat is more if Bernie's the nominee, then Harold Schultz is gonna
run around the country saying,
"Folks, it's time for serious talk about the debt. This wild socialism's out of control."
Do you remember we were talking about Bloomberg running as an independent, which he said he would do it if Trump and Bernie were the nominees.
And now the fucking coffee man is thinking about doing it, Mr. Starbucks guy. And every fucking donut who would vote for Howard Schultz and split the vote and get Trump back in there, you couldn't say to them, "Well, look at you. You just did the thing you've been yelling about since 2000. Or don't you feel like an asshole?" They would say, "No, Bernie was an asshole for taking the nomination and splitting the party and making me do this. He made me do it.
But my argument here is, as you observed, you know, a third party left would probably fizzle out like Nader did in 04. I think there's a broad agreement that there just isn't the infrastructure there or really the need for a left third party. I think it would be a better thing for Bernie to take control of the Democratic Party and for those Schultz fans to leave.
Well, the problem with that is then you might reelect Trump, hypothetically. Yeah.
If all the Schultz fans are like in New York and what else is safe, like Massachusetts and stuff, if there's like 200,000 super fans of Harold Schultz who just really care about the deficit in like the Detroit suburbs, then that would swing the election,
right? I honestly don't think it would be. For as much as I hate Bernie, I think most of these people are such a Democratic loyalist that they wouldn't be able to bring themselves to do the one worst thing in the world that you can do in their mind until that moment.
But the pressure would be too immense.
Yeah. There's no actual public demand for it either. Like you notice sometimes if you like this would there have been efforts every 4 years to set up the centrist third party. And they just have to like pay a bunch of people that they find at bus stations to like go get signatures for the third party. It's always Americans Elect or there was a worse name than that. But there have been like these efforts and like no one wants to run because there's not actually enthusiasm. They don't know the polling that's like people are dissatisfied with the parties. Like, well, yeah. Like people are dissatisfied with their jobs and they're not like, "That's why I quit and joined a monastery." Like,
well, especially
people get dissatisfied and they're like, "Well, the system," and they just vote for it.
Especially since the things that they don't like about the party would be embodied by the centrist third party. It's like the centrist third party pitch is, "Let's take everything you hate about party politics and condense it into two assholes."
Right, which is why, forgive me if this is tautological, that anyone who would actually do that, who would actually be so repulsed, is considers himself a Democratic stalwart, but is so repulsed by Bernie, they're going to vote for Howard Schultz or Mike Bloomberg as an independent or whoever. The Democratic Party is better off without those people.
But the thing's going to happen if there's like a Bernie nomination or a Warren nomination and Harold Schultz runs, like all the Harold Schultz support will come from Republicans. We're like, "Nudge, nudge, like, aren't you tired of the party that's gone out of your, gone too far to the left?" And they'd be a cat's paw for the Trump campaign, which is, it's all so obvious. Like, this is what, 19 months away? Like, yeah. I can't believe, I'm glad if he like does a listening tour and no one shows up, like Tom Steyer did this already.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh yeah, no one knows why or gives a shit. Never mind. I'm not running."
He had his
even
down
though
calls.
He spent 2 years collecting millions of emails.
7 million. 7 million people on his list.
So what? It's an email. My bank has my email. I don't show up when they're offering free pizza or whatever.
Our bank is offering free pizza?
Yeah, like next week. It's like, you gotta listen to this talk about buying their some kind of high interest account or whatever.
Are you sure this isn't a timeshare thing? This is a bank thing?
Yeah, they do it at the bank.
Or maybe I'm sure we've had the deregulation has reached the point where like timeshares have merged with.
Yeah. No, your bank just sells you timeshares now.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about, you know, third parties and how we can see, you know, 19 months out, you can already see what's coming. So I want to close thing out with an example that features both of these phenomenon. And we're speaking, of course, about a tweet thread that's been, you know, burning up the timeline. This comes courtesy of Virginia Heffernan, who is a contributing editor at Wired and a columnist for the LA Times. You may remember Virginia Heffernan back from the very early days of Chapo, like Chapo Mark 1. We did a reading series on that article she wrote for Lenny Letter. Mm-hmm. That was one of the funniest things I've ever read. This was, just refresh your memory. She, and this is almost a direct quote. She said, "Hillary is light itself."
Yeah.
And compared her to Athena, I think, you know, emerging fully formed from the skull of Zeus. She's a fan of Hillary. I did see today, someone was talking to her about Oprah, and they were like, well, the problem with Oprah was she was, you know, mild to tepid on Hillary. And Virginia responded, "I know. I did a quiet ritual by myself to forgive her for that, and I'm moving on." So she's back at it again. And
I don't remember her being this crazy on King of Queens.
So she's out today with a new tweet about, you know, Hillary and Bernie, of course. So I'm just going to read it here. It begins, "Between the lines, Hillary Clinton raising pointed questions about Bernie as an op. Consider the complicity in his campaign of bots, trolls, bros who still bully, threaten, and harass HRC and Democrats."
When did everyone start saying op? Because that was originally like a 4chan thing.
It was Chief Keef started it, but
no, there were Russian troll farms and they amplified this stuff, but like Alex Jones existed already. And all of it comes, he ran in the Democratic primary. Like, and she, like, everything he did was popular and got her to a more popular position. I'm not even endorsing it. Just, like, the polls exist. And it's, like, once she came, like, the minimum, instead of, like, mumbling and not coming out with a minimum wage position, they forced her to, like, at least $12, and that was popular. Like, I don't get it. Maybe I might. I like conspiracy theories, but I'm not good enough putting my mind in the...
Well,
in,
like, I don't the, think, like, I think this is, like, not, like, so much a conspiracy theory as it is, like, we're seeing... In these, like, you know, like I said, mirror image of what's going on with, like, MAGA people and QAnon, and just, like, as a returning theme on this show, like, what happens when you expose baby boomers to just the internet, completely uncut, unfiltered, and it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just like a way of explaining why people disagree with you online,
right?
Or why? Because, like, to these people, the idea that there are political differences between Democrats and, like, liberals and people to their left is unthinkable. Like, they can't countenance that, like, there is a political position further or more liberal or further to the left than they are. And I think this is all this, like, kind of massive coping mechanism so that, like, yeah, the people, like, who are making fun of you or disagreeing with you, like, you can immediately stamp them as an op. It's all an op. They're not real. They're not speaking for an actual point of view that's held by many people. It's all just disinformation, and that you're all living in this kind of, like, you know, Escher drawing of, like, you know, inverted perspective and illusion.
I mean, like, the election was weird, but lots of things are weird without being a Byzantine conspiracy. I guess it's just like the Russians are behind Bernie thing. I don't understand position because he followed that up by campaigning more than anyone else for Democrats and helping them win stuff. But it's just that if there is, like, a cohort of people who don't, I guess they're not appreciated because they end up going online saying this kind of stuff, who really did love Hillary Clinton and just, like, worshipped her for years. Like, remember the first season of Gilmore Girls? Rory's really in. That was a documentary. Rory was, like, really into Hillary Clinton. These are real people for whom, like, something was robbed from them. And, like, more than other candidates who've lost. Like, that, there's not, like, a John Kerry, like, kids didn't have, like, John Kerry as an inspirational photo on their wall. There were
girls. I carry him in my heart always. he windsurfs around my soul. I think what it is this. That's a real thing. It was a real trauma, and they put a name on it, and it's Russia.
Yeah.
And, like the Russia is the all-consuming explanation for why it happened, because it can't be her fault, and they can't credit an oaf like Trump. So there had to be a third option, and the third option is the evil machinations of the foreign dictator. And so every element that was part of her failure, and in their mind, Bernie running against her and therefore making her less popular by pointing out her connections to Wall Street and her past bad positions on other issues, reminding people, oh, yeah, I don't actually really agree with her very much. That is part of the vast Kremlin operation. Everything that led her to be less popular than she should have been was the fault of Russia.
But why is it so hard to brook the idea that maybe other people don't like the things I like?
This is also 8 years after Hillary herself had, like, run against Barack Obama, making him less popular with a certain number of white people in swing states. Like, not obviously not enough to matter, but that's what campaigns are. But I don't know. The only thing that I circle around this and mostly ignore it, because there's a theory early 2017 that this, like, Democrats are just going to yell about Russia and not change anything.
Democrats
have to win stuff, change things. Mm-hmm. So this crew has been, like, drifting. The life raft is going further and further away from normal conversation and into, although they don't really have 4chan, right? Where does this stuff happen? Is it just live on Twitter?
I think it's Twitter.
I think there's blog comment sections that they're all at.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Is Firedog Week still around?
Amazing.
Yeah. The Wonkette crew, probably Daily Coast. They have a very old demographic there, as far as I can tell.
Closing it out, she says, I mean, the Bernie bots and bros, even the ones who believe they were acting on principle, certainly gave Trump and the Kremlin a mighty assist. And as Hillary Clinton says in that interview, they did a virtuoso job of ritually humiliating Clinton supporters online, Gamergate incel style.
Opa, Gamergate incel style.
Gamergate incel style. Yeah,
this is like a fridge
someone,
magnet.
I was going to say someone has certainly done a good job humiliating Hillary Clinton supporters online, but you know, we're only responding to what is already out there. You know, it's like saying Mystery Science Theater like humiliated the makers of those movies. You know what I mean?
I don't know why they don't focus on Comey, because like Comey is like you could get bipartisan hatred of him going on because Republicans hate him now. That actually, had he not released the letter, she probably does win.
Oh no, he directly led her to lose.
That was it. But the thing is, you can't
bipartisan hate that doesn't exist. It is a total seesaw. It's total zero sum. If someone is, that's why they went from hating him to liking him overnight after he was fired, because if they don't like someone, you have to like them. Like, that is the tidal gravity of it now. So as soon as Comey was out and Trump didn't like him and started bad-mouthing him and all of his supporters started saying, yeah, fuck that guy, then just you are by the nature, just like by law of nature, just you are driven by the strong and weak nuclear force and gravity to say he's actually great and I love him, which is what they all did, amazingly. And they hate Bernie with the fire of a thousand suns, the guy who campaigned for her and said, hey, I'm going to go to Michigan, maybe you should come, and who they ignored. But the guy who wrote a letter that absolutely destroyed the news cycle in the last week of the election, took everything from being about the pussy tape to being about, oh, right, the emails we vaguely understand.
Yeah.
And probably cost you the election given the small number of votes at play.
Yeah.
Nope, doesn't matter. Means nothing, because they don't like him now. If they don't like him, I have to like him.
If they're going to get really weird about it, I would like at least like a good Russian KGB conspiracy that behind Anthony Weiner. Like, because that,
oh yeah,
that's like the for the one of a nail, like the origin of all this stuff. I don't know why they never gone after him.
Yeah. He is the guy. His horniness single-handedly ended the Clinton campaign.
Creating a good like Russian style conspiracy surrounding Anthony Weiner.
That sounds
Felix
fun.
Felix is going to do that tonight. Yeah. Not without even being on this episode. It's already going on, and the gears are.
Because I mean, how hard is it? We know what is the Russian? What is their mechanism? They use the internet, right? And honeypots are one of the key old KGB strategies. You know, you seduce a guy, and then you record him having sex with. I mean, Drew Pearson, famously of the Washington Press Corps, dean of the Washington Press Corps, was notorious to have had KGB kompratskaya about his gay assignations that he'd had in Moscow. You could just say that they're still doing it now, and then that Weiner was actually talking to some 60-year-old fucking GRU operative when he was like, "I'm horny now. It's cool."
See, that's just way more fun to me. If you're gonna go down the conspiracy hole, just do that. Do the Russian sex conspiracy. There's a guy in St. Petersburg who keeps like retweeting pictures of Hillary falling down. Like, people are gonna see the pictures of Hillary falling down anyway. Who cares?
Dave, one final thing before we let you go. Like, this is just like a random political thing. Could you explain what's going on with Richard Ojeda right now?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Where to start with that? So, like, Richard Ojeda, if you're not familiar, extremely large and cut veteran.
Six-foot cut.
Like, but...
Roger Stone, are you listening?
But, like, tattooed. Like, his campaign videos all show him working out.
Yeah, and he was like running in West Virginia.
Right.
He was
a state senator who won like a 99% Trump district and ran for Congress, was doing really well, and they just beat the hell out of him with ads in the final. Like, they, I remember one Republican saying, we can buy that race, which they did. They spent like $3 million saying, this guy's a Democrat, Pelosi exists, Trump, 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 and they beat him by 12 points.
But interestingly, out of every single Democratic House candidate last time around, he improved on Clinton's margin the most by something like 40, 50 points.
She lost the district by like a Saddam Hussein reelection margin. Like, and he...
By which you mean fair and square.
And he came, and he is the Ba'ath Party nominee, came within like 12 points. But then he immediately began running for president, like a week, like days after the election, like, because we were all tired and we were starting to write our, who's my gonna, and he jumps in, kind of surprising everybody, mostly because, and the thing that's weird and not weird enough to be interesting, just weird enough to be dumb, was like, Crystal Ball, this Democratic strategist who had, like, her project in the site, she lives in Louisville, and her project this cycle was like, getting real salt of the earth, populist Democrats. Like, she eggs him on to run for president. So he runs for president, quits his state Senate seat, which, again, no other Democrat could possibly win. It lets the Republican governor appoint a new senator. 10 days later, just decides, actually, I can't win this race. So he just leaves, he bails.
And that was crazy that he left the state Senate to do this.
Yeah,
what did he think was going to happen?
I mean, we saw him in the new Michael Moore movie. Like, he's featured in that, and you know, like,
which they used against him in the campaign.
And yeah, he does come across as that kind of, like, you know, as you said, salty dirt populist Democrat. You know, like, he's like, I'm a redneck, and redneck stands for, like, you know, union power against the strike breakers or whatever. And you know, he's like saying the right thing, but I couldn't help when we watched that movie just thinking, like, He seems a little touched in some
everyone
way.
Everyone had, like, mixed feelings about him, because everyone kind of liked parts of his whole deal, but others were like, wait, who is this guy?
Where is this going? Yeah, something was a little bit not off, but, like, you can imagine him going down a rabbit hole, which he did. He, like, ran for president. But he'd voted for Trump, and he was like, it was because I was lied to, which was relatable in West Virginia, but then no other Democratic for president voted for Trump. How do you get around that? It made no sense. But he was just like this likable character who was going to liven up the race and then bailed immediately. The question is, like, whether the strategists around him were going to try to make money off him, which we'd kind of need to untangle. But it's really rinky dink. One thing I will say, like, grifting on the left, it's real and it's hilarious, but not to the level of it was. The right by this point had, like, 2 years when Obama had like 20 Tea Party organizations that were basically like money laundering schemes. Yep. And the closest you have here is, like, this consultant probably egged this guy on too far to, like, maybe make some money. But yeah, it's kind of sad because I don't know, interesting, weird guys who yell, end every sentence by saying airborne, which was Richard Ojeda. I like covering them.
Yeah.
He got like way too many profiles considering he was not going to be in Congress.
It was an interesting race.
And it was interesting, like, because the worry is, the dream of his race was like, oh, if the Democratic Party is the party of the suburbs, they're never going to do anything interesting and left wing. If they're the party that, like, wins the hollers by talking about Medicare for all, then that, like,
the dream idea was, because he was the guy who was going to defeat the growing thought that demographics is political destiny now, and it's your politics are determined basically by, like, where you grew up and your educational attainment, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, if you're a white guy who doesn't have a college education, you are a Republican, and there's really nothing to be done about it. And what Jada was saying, not so fast.
And I mean, despite losing, I mean, just the fact that he outran Hillary Clinton by such a strong extent, I think shows that there is something there, but it's not something you could repair in one
cycle. Well, you don't have to run for fucking president. That's what's so insane. Yeah. It's like, I understand it. Everyone kind of understands that, barring, unforeseen things, whoever gets the nomination will probably beat Trump, because he just has not been able to break out of his area, his support base, and a lot of those states that he won just by the narrow margins have turned on him, and they now have Democratic governors who maybe aren't going to allow the same level of electoral shenanigans they did the last time, but. So everyone wants to run, but it's the only one person can get it. You're probably not going to get it. And meanwhile, you're squandering the chance to do something interesting somewhere else. All these guys from Texas running for president, what are you doing? It's like, Texas, this is the first time there's been some sort of viable Democratic machinery in Texas in a generation, and you're all going to fucking run for president against each other and waste that time instead of maybe running against John Cornyn or something like that. And then Ojeda is going to give up a fucking state Senate seat and give it to some Republican. I don't just settle down, everybody.
Yeah, that his decision was like the ultimate example of that. There's a bunch of like popular Democratic governors who could run for Senate, like in Montana and stuff, and instead they're just like, you know, I really want to go to Iowa in -20 weather in January and talk in front of 6 people, and then must make myself unelectable in my state ever again. Like, they, you know, the party can't really convince them to stop doing that. They're pretty good at shepherding them in some ways, but they cannot tell them to stop running for president.
The only time they can ever stop them from running for president is when Hillary Clinton is the only one. When that's the case, then they can clear the fucking deck with in a really smart, cagey move.
Oh, well, Dave, I'm sorry we didn't get to our planned discussion about prog rock.
Oh, it's okay. Everyone just buy the book. Buy 2 books, and that's all you need. There's the one, there's the Chapo book, there's mine. No overlap whatsoever.
Dave, have you seen Mandy, speaking of prog rock?
It's amazing.
It's fucking awesome.
It's like, yeah. I really wish art house B movie was a thing. If you try that movie 100 more times, probably 90 of them would be bad.
Yeah.
That movie's like immaculate.
Oh, it's the best.
Especially like the sequence at the sequence midway through the hypnotism scene where it just keeps like phasing in between. Oh, okay.
Dave, forget about it, dude. Like,
this is the spoiler podcast.
Yeah, we watched that movie and we were both like,
watching that scene.
Both of us were suspecting that we'd been dosed when we watched that.
No, Mandy's amazing. But Dave Weigel, political reporter for The Washington Post, thank you so much for joining us, man. It's been great.
Oh, it's been awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming through. Thanks. Until next week, guys.
Bye.
Bye.